Calling all benders and non-benders alike. Jump into the epic world of Avatar with your favorite podcast, Avatar Braving the Elements. Hosted by me, Janet Varney.
And me, Dante Bosco. Each week we'll recap and discuss a new episode.
So come join us and our amazing guests, from creators to cast to superfans, to chat about all things Avatarverse.
It's Fire Nation time. Book of Fire. Let's go. Listen to Avatar Braving the Elements
wherever you get your podcasts.
The Last Kids on Earth and their superhero alter egos are back in the latest installment of the graphic novel spinoff series, The Last Comics on Earth, Too Many Villains. Jack, June, Quint, and Dirk face their biggest challenge yet, creating the sequel to their hit graphic novel in a mad dash, puzzle-filled race across Apocalyptia to stop the biggest evil plan in history. Hey, you know what the creators of Last Comics on Earth's evil plan is? Make me and my kids love these books. Seriously, my younger kid is a huge fan of both the Last Kids series and the Last Comic series.
It's true.
And now I'm hooked too. The whole team has created a delightful cast of characters with some fantastic kid-friendly art throughout that will appeal to readers of all ages. Buy your copy of The Last Comics on Earth in stores today. You can also visit lastkidsonearth.com to learn more.
This is a podcast from Minute Media.
What is up, everybody? Welcome to Comic Book Club! I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
I'm Pete.
And we are coming to you live from a couple of different places on the internet. We are live over at Crowdcast, we're live over at YouTube, or maybe you're listening to the podcast later, iTunes, Android, Spotify, Stitcher, wherever you get your audio. It's all good, bro. Now, we have a packed... Yeah!
Oh, wow.
We have a packed song.
Do it again.
I do. Hey.
Boothman Primes is back. Congratulations.
It's 2022. Alex, bringing the hype.
Should I keep doing that all show long?
Stop.
I can't tell if the tech is broken or if the Alex robot's broken.
I mean, either way,
update
it doesn't
really matter. Update the firmware and the Zalbatron 5000, and it needs a boost.
Now, as Pete was trying to say, though, we do have some exciting news for a former member of the show. Pete, take it away.
Former? We're just, in between
R.I.P.
stuff.
R.I.P.
Until...
Go ahead.
Oh, my God. Boothman Prime is a father. Congratulations.
Congrats.
If you need context on that, we used to do the show live at a theater, and we had a dude doing the tech. We called him Boothman Prime. We recently, a year ago, time has lost all meaning, had him on the show when he got married at a Dunkin' Donuts. Now, I've gotten a report here in the comments on Crowdcast that they did not have the baby at a Dunkin' Donuts. Is that true, Pete?
That is true, yes. They missed went to a hospital.
I thought
baby.
All of their life events were now tied to D&D.
Yeah. I always actually go to Dunkin' Donuts for any of my medical problems. And
Smart.
Like, I feel that's call me in the morning.
Dunkin' Donuts causes a lot of medical problems. And any baby born at Dunkin' Donuts is immediately smothered with too much cream and too much sugar.
Oh, come on.
Really, they keep telling me my donut levels are too low and that'll solve my problem.
That's definitely true.
That's how
it. It's funny. We haven't seen each other in person in so long. I forgot how your legs look. I only see your torso and your faces.
Oh man!
Or in some cases, not your
Interesting.
Faces. Right, Alex.
Well, why don't we? Right, absolutely. Why don't we get into this? We have a couple of guests coming later on the show, but first. It's the time of the month when we say thank you to all of our amazing Patreon supporters, all folks that support us at patreon.com/comicbookclub. Anybody at the $5 level and above, we give them a good old shout out here on the show.
Shout out.
Starting with Aaron C. Hollis.
Adam Marks.
Adriel Moreland.
Elena Fontenot.
Amanda Harris.
Amy Gonzalez.
Andrew Edge.
Andrew Primo.
Andrew Tillman.
Beercat PhD.
Benjamin Brown.
Carly W.
Christina Jaramillo.
Chris Terralizzi.
Clemens Luer.
Curtis LaRock.
Demand Ryan.
Dan Snow.
Daniel Wentes.
Daniel, I love you, Pete Cabrera.
Daniel Wharton. There goes that love.
Sorry, Daddy but... Heck.
Debbie Gloom.
Dennis Scott.
Derek Mainhart.
Dylan LJ.
Eduardo Martinez.
Emmett Quish.
Aaron Dorian.
Jeffrey Risher.
Gerard Devilliers.
Isaac Carter.
James Connolly.
James Kurtz.
Jason Donahue.
Jolene.
John George.
Jonathan Jong.
Jonathan McCool.
Joshua Gibson.
Joshua W. Bronson.
Catherine Annenson.
Casey Newhaven.
Kevin Grimes.
Kevin Kleinrock.
Karen Broderick.
Cody Thomas.
My man Kyle.
Lee Brown.
LaWanna Thomas.
Cute. Luke Asink.
Mark Carrillo.
Mark Zeller.
Matt Tice.
Megan Thigpen.
Michael Tillman.
Mitchell McDonald.
Nathaniel Diaz.
Nelson Kelso.
Nick Grayson.
Off-White Savior.
Official CBC chef, Brett Macris, a.k.a. Stray Bullies.
Omnia Solart.
Oren Dix.
Pablo Martinez. What's up,
Pedro A. Rangel.
Pete's Pretty Kitty.
Prod Todd. Pauly G.
You got the Rev Mikey.
Rob Bliss.
Robert Plantanta.
Oops. Sarah Schabmuller.
Sarah Schaefer. Also Robert Pettinato. But oh, go ahead.
That's how other people pronounce it. Scott Carpenter.
Scott England.
Stanley.
Steve Cook.
Tamila Rush.
Taylor Bryan.
The Big Flood.
The 12 Banch.
Thomas Glenn.
Victor Perez.
Will Buchanan.
And Zika's Viral Comics. Thank you all so much for supporting the show. We really, really appreciate it. You all are very awesome. We could not do this show without you. Now,
it's true. Especially you, Robert Patat-tow. Patat-tow.
Now, one other thing to mention here, as we're going through a little business at the top of the show, we've been asking folks over the past couple of weeks to leave us books they want us to review in the iTunes comments. Had a great time doing that. We've been reviewing them over on our Stack podcast. We got a new one here I wanted to read. This is from Ed Dude on iTunes. These guys are funny and they tell me what I want to know of the comic book world. I've been listening to this show for years and love it. I'd love it for the guys to review Spider-Man, The Other.
Ooh, yes. Yeah. I remember that.
I do not remember that.
I remember that.
I remember the title, and that's about it. So excited to revisit it. Here's what we're going to do. It won't be on this week's Stack podcast, but next week's Stack podcast, we will review Spider-Man The Other. We will revisit that storyline. Yeah, come on. Give us a little bit of time. Calm down.
A week.
Calm down. So we're going to review that. And if you'd like to request an old trade or an OGN or whatever to review, just hit us up in the iTunes comments. We'd love to do that.
Not whatever, and, you know, something that you like that you think like. Maybe we'll yeah. like.
Literally.
A Tijuana Bible that you found in the woods.
Yeah, a good slice of pizza. I'd love to review that.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
A real nice slice. Whatever meat accident Pete's eating for lunch.
Oh, come on, dude. Cheesesteaks are not meat accidents.
Speaking of the opposite of meat accidents, let's talk about delicious drinks, because as we mentioned or hinted at earlier, Stray Bullet, a.k.a. Brett Macris, has been curating drinks for us for months now from different places. This week, we chose a Applejack Negroni.
Wow.
Which is
right up my alley.
Very exciting. I was drinking this last night. Real good. It's Laird's Applejack brandy, Campari, and oh my god, sweet vermouth, and then you do a twist of orange in it, or as suggested in the Slack, you take a whole apple and you jam it on the side.
That's right, and that's what I did.
Yeah,
right here.
Yeah.
Oh,
now you guys are making fun of me for my large apples, but take a look at the size of this apple, okay?
That is. Are you sure it's not just closer to the camera? It looks very close to the camera. Yeah.
No, look at it.
Mine looks big when I hold it up there, too.
Yeah, that does look larger. So what's that called? Perspective?
Oh, wow.
I don't have a good perspective on that, but you tell me what perspective is.
See, what you do is you cut up the apple and then you put a slice in.
I wanted to do that. Or actually, what I wanted to do was take this apple and then hollow it out and make a cup. But my wife was like, no, we're going to eat that.
You got to be able to sacrifice for the bit.
Yeah, come on, man.
No, I will say,
what about one for Woodland? Don't you get an apple for Woodland?
Where's my Whitland apple? when he gets up in the morning. I love comment. Shenanigan says, "Where'd you get an apple that big?" Alex famously orders high-end genetically modified apples
from
Fresh Direct, Which it must be expensive just to have some poor person cart that James and the Giant Apple to your door.
Even worse, I order it one apple at a time.
Oh, man.
Yeah. I just have them carry one apple to my house, and then I say, thank you. And then I go the way, I order another one.
Hey, I hope you tip the apple, them at least. The apple guy wants another 10-pound apple who wants to run it over to his house. Weird apple guy.
Weird apple guy. Well, we have a bunch of people who are not weird apple guys as our guests of the show today. So why don't we welcome them in later in the show? Mark Russell is going to be here, but let's welcome in our first guest. He is the curator and one of the writers of Kolchak, the Night Stalker's 50th anniversary, which is currently on Kickstarter. James Aquilone. James, hello. Thank you for coming on. Sorry, hey. I butchered your last name right there.
I didn't hear. How did you say it?
Aquilone?
No, that's right.
I did it wrong the first time. The time you didn't hear, I got it horribly wrong.
Alex, you don't have to admit mistakes that never occurred.
Those are
called secrets.
James, this is a very cool project, and as usual, when we bring people on with Kickstarters, you don't need our help at all, because this Kickstarter is killing it right now.
Yeah, congratulations.
Thank Absolutely you. Amazing.
I can always use one moment, though.
Yeah, well, you got the pre-CBC bump, the very rare bump that occurs before you appear on a podcast.
Yeah, looking at it right now, your goal is 14,500, and I just watched it as it switched from 40,000 to it's now at $41,106 as we're talking. Given that Kolchak is nothing against Kolchak, the hottest property in the world, why do you think there's all this interest in it? Why are all these people so excited about this collection?
You know, when I started the project and I started looking into it, I discovered that there's this huge fandom there, and there are Facebook groups that have tens of thousands of Kolchak fans, and
nice.
They post about Kolchak every day. 10 to 20 times a day. So I was like, okay, I think this is going to be successful, because I had no idea. I mean, I know a lot of people love Kolchak, but I didn't know it was so active on social media. I'm like, how are you posting about a show that's been off the air for 47 years and then still find a way to post about it every day? So I figured people are waiting for something like this, you know? So when it launched and it just started to take off, I was right. And the fans were definitely waiting for a project like this. And, there wasn't this type of stuff. Moonstone has always done Kolchak books, but there's never been officially licensed merch and stuff. So now fans can really get their hands on all that stuff.
Can you walk us through, if anyone hasn't been watching 70s television, could you walk us through who Kolchak is and where he came from?
Well, Kolchak is a reporter who somehow just always stumbles upon monsters. So, every week on the TV show, every week he ran into a zombie or a vampire. But it did start off as two TV movies. It was first the Night Stalker in 1972, and then the Night Strangler in 1973, and they were both written by Richard Matheson. So, it got off to a great start, and then they did the TV series, which lasted 20 episodes, and that's all we ever got of Kolchak.
Wow.
It's wild, but I mean, Kolchak inspired X-Files for sure, feels like was sort of a direct connection there. So the mark has been left.
Yeah, Chris Carter was very open about Kolchak being the main inspiration for the X-Files. And Darren McGavin even appeared on the X-Files at one point. He was supposed to be on as Kolchak, but I don't think Darren McGavin really never liked Kolchak, and I don't think he really wanted to do it. And so he ended up not doing it on the X-Files. So he was some other character. Yeah, I think I don't know if Darren McGavin would approve of all this and the Kickstarter or any of it. So he did not like the show, and I think that was one of the reasons why they ended up canceling it, because he was not happy with
it. Oh, man.
It's so funny. I feel like there are so many actors on those 70s and 80s TV shows that hated their job or just I don't know what I'm doing. And then the shows become these huge cult hits, and they show up to Comic-Cons where, like, this is not the life I intended.
Especially back in the day, like in like the 70s, 80s, I don't think a lot of these actors, they certainly didn't embrace like science fiction and fantasy and horror. I think they all hated it. I think we probably started seeing them embracing it more in like the 90s. And now everything is geek culture. So now everyone's like, oh, I was always a Star Wars fan. But they all hated it, you know, back then. Yeah.
They hated it. They probably wanted to be in Westerns or something that makes no sense now.
Yeah, well, those are huge at one point.
So clearly, even though, like we're talking about, like there is a actual fan base for Kolchak, there also seems to be a comic creator fan base as well, because you put together a pretty incredible team for this.
Yeah.
How did you approach people? And did people immediately jump and say, yes, absolutely, I write something about Kolchak? Or did you have to sort of nudge them and convince them a little bit?
No, that was actually pretty easy, because there are a ton of Kolchak fans out there. And I think every horror writer is probably a Kolchak fan. So sometimes I just like took a chance and they're like, yeah, I'm a Kolchak fan. And so I was like, okay. Kim Newman obviously is a Kolchak fan. He was doing the audio commentary for the new Blu-ray of the series, which came out in October. So I saw his name there and I was like, oh, okay, I'm going to contact Kim Newman. And he like immediately got back to me, and I didn't know him or anything. I was just like sending the email out into the world, and he said okay. So he was in. The first person I asked though was Richard Christian Matheson, the son of Richard Matheson, who in his own right is an incredible horror writer and screenwriter. And I had worked with him on my previous Kickstarter, Classic Monsters Unleashed. He wrote a short story for that. So I figured, you know, I have to ask him first, and if I get the Matheson seal of approval, then I'm good. And he agreed to write the intro, and he's going to write a short story, which would be his first comic book story he's ever written.
Wow, that's exciting.
Awesome. That's awesome. Now, the format of the book is through different eras, right? We see different decades. Why did you go with Kolchak sort of through time?
Well, I wanted it to be like a celebration of his life and like, you know, something that would align well with like a 50th anniversary. So this has never been done before. To see Lane Kolchak then like every decade's childhood until his possible death. And I really did want to see Kolchak in high school, you know, working like at the high school newspaper. So I said, that would be great. Yeah. And I was like, an origin story. And we got David Avalon, who's going to write that. So I was like, that's really cool. So it kind of started with that. And since, you know, Darren McGavin was in A Christmas Story, I said, you got to throw in like a Red Ryder BB gun.
Nice.
Yeah.
You know.
Shoot your eye out, kid.
Yep. So we'll have a story in every decade from the 30s till the early 2000s. And then there'll be three stories set in the 70s.
Wow. Nice. That's awesome.
What will people get when they pledge this Kickstarter? Obviously, there's different things for different levels, but you're getting, I assume, the whole collection involving all of the different stories from every decade?
Yes. Yeah, all the books. Well, there's really two versions of the graphic novel. The soft cover will have all the comic book stories and the intro and the essays. But then we're doing a hardcover, and that we're going to actually have another 10 prose short stories, which we're having open submissions after the Kickstarter. So Kolchak fans, if they have any ideas for stories, they could write a short story and submit it to us, and it could possibly.
That's awesome.
So that's going to be alongside the comic book stories. And then they will also have like a one-shot comic book, like about 40 pages. We'll have three stories from the graphic novel will be in there. So you can have, we got our graphic novel, we have our comic book, and we have something for everybody.
Awesome. I mean, anyone out there listening, like, if you want to, obviously go support the Kickstarter because it's a great book and super interesting. But if you are just wanting to launch a Kickstarter, James' Kickstarter is really well laid out. So many different tiers, so many different ways to sort of, it's really well done, James.
Thank you. Yeah, I love Kickstarter. I did a Kickstarter last year and we did pretty well. This one is already seemed like it's going to blow that one away. So Kickstarters are fun. I'm kind of, you know, I'm bad at refreshing the page. I'm always like, well, and I wouldn't even.
Meaning you're doing it time. Too much or not enough?
Oh, too much. Way too.
Yeah.
Much.
every 4 or 5 minutes.
I'm doing it right now. Yeah. Since we've been talking. Yeah. So I love it. Well, and it's money too. So it's like every time I hit that button, it's more money. You know.
Yeah, yeah, it's like a slot machine, but it pays out no matter what.
Right, I always win. Yeah. Well, sometimes people cancel though, and then that really annoys me because then it's like, wait a minute,
sometimes you lose.
Investigate, and then I email them.
Investigate, send them letters, find out their home address, like all their normal stuff.
Yeah.
throw a brick through their window wrapped in a cold check comic book.
That's not cool, man. I mean, people actually pledge and then like cancel it like 5 minutes later.
Yeah. Oh, it's okay. Heartbreaking.
Rude. Just accept that your money's gone at this point. All right, and move on to the next thing. That's all I'm saying. James, how much longer can people pledge this Kickstarter? How long is it open until?
I think we have another 30 days. I think we end February 11th. Something like that.
Right.
Nice.
Yeah, we just started. It just launched yesterday. So we're only like a day and a half.
That's wild.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Awesome. That's amazing.
That's amazing.
That's great. Yeah. James, congratulations. This project is so cool. I can't wait to see it go on to clearly incredible success. And thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you. This has been
Keep stalking the night.
Keep stalking the night. Thanks, James.
Congratulations.
All right.
All right, there we go. That was James Acalone, and the book is Kolchak, the Night Stalker's 50th Anniversary. And you guys can't see me is what I'm getting? Is that what's going on?
That's correct. Oh, why, are you doing something funny? Are you doing something cool? Corey,
I have so many large apples right now. It's ridiculous.
Nice.
And wait, you can see my large apple earlier in the show, right?
Yep.
Okay.
Yes, definitely. Well, I have it blurred out because I don't want to see that stuff. It's too, too weird. But you're in your mid-show clown makeup, right?
I feel like I should take off my shirt just for the brief second when I come back on camera. But
oh my God.
We'll see what happens.
That's
all right.
Scary.
All right, man. You said it. That's what the audio listeners are really seeing in their mind's eye now. Alex's surprisingly hairy chest.
Perhaps not that surprising. Let's bring in our next guest. We're a big fan of his work here on the show. And he has two DC books that are coming out right now. One Star Squadron and Batman Urban Legends. His name is Mark Russell. Here he is. Hello, Mark. How are you?
Hey, doing good.
Good.
All right. Well,
Mark, I know we teched before the show. Can you hear me now?
I am. You can hear you.
Okay, but nobody can see me, so that's
nobody can.
Excellent.
Just like the fans wanted.
Just the
black bar. You've been redacted.
Excellent. Mark, as I mentioned, we're a huge fan of your books here, and I've really been enjoying One Star Squadron in particular. It's definitely a different mode for DC, even though, of course, you have done your very incisive cultural commentary, biting political commentary type thing. But this seems to be delving very specifically into the gig economy and really in a very good and very funny way, throwing a lot of classic characters under the bus. Did DC take any convincing there, or were they always on board with this concept?
No, weirdly, they're the ones who sort of approached me with the concept. Oh, yes. Their idea was what they approached me with is they wanted to do sort of a Justice League International type like story, but it'd be about like superheroes working as superheroes, like having to make money at it. And then I basically just took that and made the One Star Squadron out of it using the cast of characters they'd let me use. So I think if they did have any pushback, it was like, no, you can't do that to, you know, X, you can't do that to this character. So it took a little bit of a casting call to find all the characters I could use in the story. In fact, initially, the Minuteman character, I wanted to make that Hourman, but they said no. Right. Presumably because Hourman's about to get his own show on the CW, and they didn't want him, like, you know, jonesing for Miraclo pills in a comic book.
Fortunately, they have a hero for every time increment that could be imagined. Out there.
So I had to make up a new hero to take his place. So I made a Minuteman whose superpowers only last for 1 minute, which, you know, in a way works even better because it's even more pathetic.
Yeah, super funny. Now, I feel like comedy in comics is hard, and you're great at it. But you also have the real deal story, character, drama underneath. I'm curious, which do you sort of approach first when you're writing?
Well, it's weirdly, the saddest things are usually kind of the funniest to me. So I kind of approach them at the same time. It's like, what's the story? What is, you know, what would happen to the real world to these characters if they really had to work in the gig economy? What are the sorts of things they would have to face? And then usually when I ask myself those sorts of questions, the funny things about it and the sad things about it often occur to me more or less at the same time. And usually they're the same thing.
So your eyes roll back in your head and it all just
sort of screen. I don't want to make it sound easy. I do have to work at it, but yeah, it's like a lot of it is just thinking about what the implications are of putting superheroes in like the gig economy, and that's kind of the basis from which I write the entire series. And also, you know, the other sort of polar front that I work from is the idea of like Red Tornado being an android, but trying his best to act like a human being, what he thinks a human being should be. And a lot of what he thinks a human should be is based upon like his experience as an assistant manager under Manhunter, and also his experience sort of rubbing shoulders with Superman, who ironically is not a human being either.
Now, given that you do have, speaking specifically about One Star Squadron, but also in general, you do have these very pointed political takes through a lot of your work. I know we're certainly steeped in discussions about the gig economy, but do you do research for this? Are there materials that you're looking back at, certain articles you're referencing or books or anything like that?
Weirdly, I kind of feel like research is the living I do before I get an idea. Like the research is all the things I'm reading, the things I'm thinking about. And then when I'm approached to like write a comic or I get an idea from a comic, it's usually based upon research I've already done, just the things I'm choosing to read about. And so I think that was my research, was just sort of like reading articles and seeing in tweets and stuff about how the gig economy has affected people's lives, oftentimes how it's destroyed their lives. And then that kind of like, whatever, that's what sort of like inspires me to come up with the title.
A lot of your stuff, this included, as you're intimating here, is very critical, and I think well said, but critical of capitalism. Do you see anything positive in capitalism, or is it all downhill?
No, I think that there has been a lot historically positive about capitalism. It provided us with the highest standard of living in the world throughout the 20th century. But I think that the difference was that back then, you know, in the 20th century, in the post-war era, when capitalism worked for people, for regular people, you had corporations that felt honor-bound to take care of their employees. IBM like had like a country club that anyone, even the guy who just put in like the rearview mirror in like a General Motors car, got a membership to like the General Motors club. And you don't really see that responsibility on the part of corporate America for its employees anymore. We're now pivoting more to like a gig mentality, a gig economy mentality, where everyone's on their own and no one's going to take care of you. So even though we've got all the leverage, you've somehow got to like find a way to like provide for your own health insurance, to find an apartment when you're making $1,800 a month. And I think that's the difference. That's why we need to sort of pivot away from that sort of our old model of like capitalism taking care of us, from like, well, no, we need to actively take care of the problems the market is no longer addressing.
Have you ever gotten any notes in response to some of these sort of underlying themes in a lot of your stories from any of the companies you work for?
Notes in the sense of like
just being like, hey, that's too far. That seems a little, either not necessarily because they're scared of their own, but for the characters that you're writing toward.
Yeah, I do get some pushback sometimes, and usually, yeah, it's character based. It's not like you're out of bounds with your philosophy. Yeah. It's like we can't have Fred Flintstone smoking.
Right. Even though he for sure did in some of the shoots. No way.
He made his name selling cigarettes.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's more about that. It's more about the sanctity of the characters than it is about any of my commentary, any of my sort of half-baked theories of life.
Well, on the other end of the spectrum, to get back to One Star Squadron for a second, I assume, like a lot of the comic book industry, you're working as freelance. Freelance and gig economy are not exactly the same thing, but is there a temptation there to put in little, they're not exactly, like they're not one-to-one, but there's certainly a lot of overlap there. Yeah. Is there any temptation to like put very specific details about your work freelancing for DC in this book that is about freelancing slash gig economy?
Yeah, there is a temptation, and it's a temptation I have given into. there is, you know, the second issue details Minuteman having to go to Comic-Con, you know, which is sort of like the bottom rung of the ladder for superheroes, to have to like do an appearance at Comic-Con, and you know, like he has to haggle to get someone to pay him for autographs and stuff. But it's sort of based upon actual experiences I've had at Comic-Cons where, you know, I've been told I can't go into green rooms that people who have played characters I've written have, are allowed into, or, you know, just like, you know, you feel like almost like you're a second class citizen sometimes. Cause they, you know, it's like the green room for people who were, you know, for the guy who played Stormtrooper number 32, Star Wars is very different, and then you can't go in there. But the, you know, before comic creators, they have like a water hose in the back that you can some green room. So it was kind of a little bit about that, and also, you know, just about how you kind of have to live by your wits. Like what you're doing one day may be completely different than what you're doing the next day. And I don't want to spoiler things, but there's more things kind of based upon my own experience in the gig economy coming up. So I guess, like I said before, you know, my life was kind of the research for this one.
Yeah. That's awesome. Well, and also you're in the book. So you're technically, yeah, you exist in the DC universe.
I am now my own creator, which, yeah, I'm the only being in the universe to say that. Yeah, I put myself in there precisely because that section was sort of based upon a somewhat real world experience I had. So I thought that would be kind of funny and a little meta. Steve Lieber, the artist, also shows up. Although I think he's just sort of in the background in the Comic-Con scene. Mm-hmm. But he's like actually Red Tornado's neighbor, like later in the series.
That's fun.
Now, I wanted to ask you about your other DC book, because it also has elements of comedy, but it almost goes in the other direction and plays it relatively straight. You have a ongoing story that kicked off in last week's, I think, issue of Batman Urban Legends number 11, focusing on Ace the Bat Hound. And again, though there are jokes, it treats it in a relatively realistic manner. Why go in that direction? Why was that appealing to you?
Well, I think because what really ultimately sort of appeals to me about stories is writing about relationships and about how relationships help us sort of navigate through life. And that's what makes the struggle for survival worthwhile. And in this one, I wanted to focus on the relationship between Batman and Ace, his dog, and about how strong that relationship is and about how it is what transcends. You know, even when they're not together, they still feel that sense of intense loyalty to each other. And it's ultimately what saves them both.
Well, yeah, I really love, there's a lot of big Turner and Hooch energy coming from this first, at least the first installment of this.
I take that as a compliment. I'm not sure if it was intended as a compliment.
100% a compliment. A huge Turner and Hooch fan. And the fact that you really deal like that movie really puts in the work of like the sort of intense emotions that the Ace goes through as Batman like brings him back from his earlier life.
And one of the other things I really wanted to kind of talk about this, which is like, you know, we're so used to stories where superheroes just kind of come in and save people. I wanted to do a story where really it's about a man and a dog who save each other.
Yeah.
It's really about the heroism is our finding each other worthy of risking ourselves to save, not from just like one person being the savior of everybody.
Nice. I was a little worried. I love the whole setup, but playing with my emotions at the end of that first arc there, I'm a little concerned about the fate of those two.
A Batman? Well, they're still
alive at the beginning. I mean, yeah, they obviously Ace gets, you know, captured. They both get captured. A spoiler. But, you know, I guess it is a spoiler. I probably shouldn't have said that. But it's not the first time I've sort of cracked out of turn. But yeah, it really does play for some high stakes between these two characters.
Yeah.
You have a couple of other titles that are going right now that aren't necessarily DC stuff. You have a graphic novel, I believe, called Not All Robots. What can you tell us about that?
Well, Not All Robots is about a near future where robots have all the jobs, which, of course, you know,
very near future, right, potentially.
Which under our current economic model would mean that the rest of us would basically just be broke. We would be destitute, and whoever happened to own those robotic companies would have everything once robots take over the jobs. So the way they work around that, the way they are able to basically create a world that sort of works with robots having all the jobs, is they assign one robot to every human family. So every human family has a robot that's sort of their breadwinner. But then the robot, you know, resents the family it's been arbitrarily assigned to take care of. And when the robot comes home from work, he just wants to go in the garage and be left alone. Oh, man. Talk to me.
Can I finish my can of oil before I have to deal with all your problems?
Leave me the Pennzoil. Just go do your own thing. But the humans, for their part, live in terror of like this giant metal monster that lives in their garage. And you know, a certain percentage of the robots have what they call a glitch rate, where they just go crazy and kill their human family.
Oh, no.
So, you know, people live in constant terror that their robot's going to glitch and kill them all in their sleep. So it really is about the sort of mutual terror created by economic codependence, which is really what we all lived on, you know, in like the good old days when everyone was a one income, single income, like household. It's like, you know, we all were kind of beholden upon one person to provide for us. And it created so much economic pressure on that person, usually the dad in the family, that I think it like disrupted a lot of relationships just because the dad felt so overburdened by the responsibility of taking care of everyone. Everyone kind of resented the fact that the dad had all the power, about how it's not good for one person to have that much power in a family, and about how it creates mutual resentments.
Finally, a terrifying physical representation of our ongoing economic anxiety.
Yeah.
we got a question in the comments from Nat Towson. Is it exhausting to be so aware of the problems facing our society?
Actually, it feels therapeutic to me to actually write about it. Because, yeah, I live in this terror whether I choose to or not.
Yes, it's just that's a good point.
By writing it, you know, I at least get some of it out of my head. You know, and I feel like I've done something, however small. And writing a comic book about it is about as small as you can get in terms of actual activism. But
no. You're our robot breadwinner, Mark.
Yeah,
you're
that's
our
right.
robot breadwinner.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that. I'm happy. I do not resent you. Don't worry. I'm not going to glitch.
I don't know.
I also do think, I mean, in all seriousness, I think there's something to be said for what you are doing in comic books, because comic books generally are thought of as very broad superhero battles. That's pretty much it. They were never like that, though. And I think us, you know, hardcore comic book fans, when people are like, God, Captain America's getting political again, we're like, what are you talking about? You're a crazy person. But that almost feels like the stuff that you're doing, it's double going in that direction, where it's uber clear that it is satire, it is driving down on these things. And I think it's important to have that alongside the other stuff that clearly people are interpreting too broadly, you know?
You know, I feel like the point of arts in general is to be the sort of mutating gene in the human mental genome, that, you know, the genes in us that mutate that are a little different than what's we, you know, they're not just the self-replicating genes that cause us to evolve, that cause us to grow and become different over time. And I feel that's all what the purpose of the arts is, to be that sort of gene that doesn't replicate itself exactly the same, but that does something a little different, so that we have the opportunity to evolve should we choose to take it.
That's great. I also feel like comics used to be a little bit more commenting on culture. And I feel like your Flintstone series, I feel like really everyone was like, oh, we comics can be fun and also make you feel something in this way, as opposed to just being like a dark mirror up to society. It's like, no, look, here's a problem that is we're dealing with through humor and these characters that we love.
Yeah, you know, as dark as some of the things are that I comment about, I never want to approach it with despair. I never want to be part of the darkness. I always want to be like part of like somebody who's like there to like lend myself to that so that we can get through this together. And I think it's the way I always approach it. It's like there's got to be a way for us to get through this together, as opposed to like, nope, let's just turn out the lights. Wait, gotta sleep under the bed.
Do you ever want to go back to the Flintstones?
You know, part of me does, but part of me always, when I see, you know, someone making, I don't mean to talk shit about anybody in particular, but, you know, I see somebody remaking a hit, or doing a sequel to the last hit movie they had 20 years ago. I always think, oh, this person's admitting that their career is done.
Yeah, they hit a wall, clearly.
Yeah, so probably not. Although there is the deluxe edition of the Flintstones that's coming out next month, and I just got my comps in today, and it's really beautiful. It contains all 12 issues of the Flintstones, plus the Flintstones Booster Gold crossover I did with Rickley and Artie. So I'm really happy with that. It's been my dream for like a long time to see all of it collected in one book. So well,
congratulations, man.
Thank you. It was great. Yeah, I feel like that's kind of the happy ending to the Flintstones.
Right. We got a question here in the comments from Derek Mainhart. Says, why the title My Bad for your important new superhero universe?
Well, it's co-created with my friend Bryce Ingman, who writes the half of the story about the villain, Emperor King, and I write the half about the hero, the Chandelier. And for those who aren't familiar, the Chandelier is like a billionaire vigilante, sort of like Batman. He's the heir to a lamp fortune. Yeah. So he chose to become a night vigilante called the Chandelier. But his actual real life persona, the billionaire Jamington Winthrop, gets a present for his birthday from this supervillain. He gets a salad shooter for his birthday from the villain Emperor King. And so this blows his mind because he's like, oh, has he figured it out? Has he figured out that I'm really the Chandelier? And he just torments him. Like, what's he going to do now that he knows? Does he know? He knows. What's he going to do with this knowledge now? And so that part of the story is just about his angst. And then the other part of the story written by my friend Bryce is about the Emperor King and him sort of catching, you know, he's a very bitter, spiteful villain. And he creates this trap for this hero who he really hates, but gets the wrong hero in the trap. And then decides he really hits it off with this hero that he's caught in the trap. But he can't let the hero out because it's like once it's started, he's got to fall through. So he's got to watch as his new friend is sort of put through 16 different levels of torture in this machine. Oh, wow. And it's called My Bad, part because, you know, everyone's making these horrible mistakes. And also because it's about this guy's arch nemesis and how he's tormenting he's haunting his waking thoughts.
Wow. Super fun issue.
I love that book. To get back to the DC stuff, One Star Squadron, the first two issues have come out. The third one is that next month? Is that right?
Yeah, that comes out, I think, in a couple weeks.
And Batman Urban Legends is the first of six parts that is running through the title. So is that's also monthly? That's not like bi-weekly or any sort of schedule?
Right,
like that?
Yeah, also monthly. Okay.
Awesome. And anything else coming out for you that you want to plug before we let you go?
Well, the sixth and final installment of Fantastic Four Life Story.
Another great book that we didn't talk about, but I love the parts of the Fantastic Four sort of mythology that you picked out. I thought were so interesting and smart. Really enjoyed that book.
It was a pure labor of love for me. I'm amazed that they offered it to me, and it's just been a joy to work on.
That's awesome.
Well, actually, quick question about that one, because we've talked about this a little bit under our Stack podcast. It is not satirical exactly. It's much more serious. Was there any call they're like, oh, you're gonna do like a funny Fantastic Four, and then you're like, no, I'm doing the serious one? Or was that was always on the deck at the entire time?
Yeah, no, the way we approached it from the very beginning was that this is gonna be a serious telling of a Fantastic Four life story. Yeah, there's moments in it where, you know, it's funny, or people are, you know, there's little jokes and gags in the background, but the main sort of focus is not satire or humor. It's about telling the story of these heroes having to like live through this common tragedy that forced them all together and remaining family despite all the things that happened to them.
That's awesome. Yeah.
It's so good.
And this is definitely not a easy, fun question to leave you on, but we do have one over here on YouTube from BJS. Says, when you look back at your work, do you see ideas, themes, emotions that you weren't consciously aware of at the time? If so, like what?
Wow, that's a deep question.
Yeah.
I might have to come back to answer that, but I think the thing that really kind of, when I look back on my work, the thing that's kind of I'm most surprised by is how much hope I put in. Because usually when I was writing him, I wasn't very hopeful. But it's true that there's this, you know, that I still, despite it all, I'm somewhat kind of optimistic about the human race and our ability to overcome these problems that I mostly write about. It's sort of like what Kierkegaard said about Christianity. He thought that, like, preachers should preach against Christianity, should tell people not to become Christians and to, you know, ignore the Bible and stuff, because his reasoning being that only the true believers would remain. And I feel like a lot of ways that's what I've done to myself. It's like I've tried to talk myself out of it and to like just give up on the human race, but somehow I'm still a true believer. I still remain.
Oh, man.
True believer.
That's awesome.
Mark, Stanley just said it thank the same you. Way.
Mark, thank you so much for coming on the show. It's a pleasure. Big right. fans of your work.
Thank you, everyone.
Yeah, take care. Thank you so Mark. Much. Yeah, well,
all right, there we go. Once again, the two books from DC you should be checking out are One Star Squadron, which, as mentioned, the second issue is out on stands now. Also, Batman Urban Legends number 11, which kicks off the ace of the Batman story. It's super awesome.
Yeah,
super
I can't wait to keep reading that. It's been really cool.
He's like a Swiss Army knife. He does the sky. He does it all, and it's really just great work across the board.
Yeah, whether it's a corkscrew or a knife or a toothpick that's surprisingly there, he's got it all.
A toothpick you use once and then put back, and the next time you pull it out, you're like, oh, I didn't wash this.
Oh, gross. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Who, you right. never washed the toothpick.
Why don't we move on with our next section, which is my favorite section because you all make it up. It's your audience question. And for audience questions, all you got to do is drop a question, either an ask a question over on Crowdcast or in the comments over on YouTube. But while you're doing that, let's turn it to this week's sponsor, which is once again the Blindsided podcast from the Players Tribune. Given how they play the game, you might not think that professional athletes are dealing with mental health issues, but that's exactly what the Players Tribune is tackling with their first ever mental health podcast, Blindsided. Hosted by former NHL goalie Corey Hirsch and psychiatrist Dr. Diane McIntosh, the show will share the moments for a variety of athletes when everything changed for them and mental health became the most important focus of their lives. Blindsided allows listeners to have an understanding of the different types of mental health challenges people face, whether you're a professional athlete or not. Guests this season include Kevin Love, Paul Bissonnette, and Kurt Warner. Blindsided dives in deeper. It gets clinical and allows listeners to leave with an understanding of the different varieties of mental health challenges people face, why they appear, and how athletes in particular face them down. Blindsided is a sports podcast, not only for people who follow sports, but also for those who don't. And now, before we go over to your audience questions, we know what Justin and I are drinking, unless Justin, you've turned to.
Oh, yeah. Something I got a spruce tip from Racket River Brewing, a brewery Ooh. In Tupper Lake, New York, which is way up
Tupper Lake, yeah.
Near where bro. I'm from. And I was Woo-hoo. Up there a few weeks ago, and it is good. But let nice. Me just say, shout out to Brett Macris. This cocktail was fantastic. I really enjoyed it.
Nice. Yeah, speaking of which, I'm still working on that. Still drinking my apple here.
That's really not good. How you drink.
I don't need that noise.
I have a straw.
I don't know if I need that noise.
Yeah, that was really
not
how
it cross sounds.
I'm drinking a little vodka ginger ale right now. A little vodka ginge.
Ginge. Nice. Very nice.
Very cool. All right. Why don't we go into some questions here? We're going to start with Crowdcast, and I see a couple popping up already on YouTube as well. This is from
popping.
This is from Jolene. Obviously, we have a method of recommending books to read, be read, and reviewed through iTunes reviews for you all. But on top of that, what are your thoughts on Patreon polls and exclusives?
Ooh. Yeah, I mean,
sure.
I love to read comics. I'll read and talk about comics all day.
Absolutely. Wow. Yeah, this was a little discussion on our Patreon Slack today in terms of we don't do a lot of trade reviews or OGN reviews, and certainly part of the way we've been trying to, in a positive way, force ourselves to do it is through getting you guys to ask us on the iTunes comments because we like doing it. It's just hard to do that given that we're usually reviewing 20 to 30 card comic books a week, including all the other things we do. Right. But that's not to say that we don't want to do it. So any way we can, we definitely will.
Yeah. As long as the comic's printed on like my child's clothing or something, it'd be easy for me to read it.
Absolutely. There we go.
Anything for you to spend some quality time with your kids, you know?
TC Brian05 over on YouTube. Oh, it's for me. Alex, a couple of weeks ago, you mentioned the non-comic book reading you did in 2021. Any recommendations? Definitely not. I mean, if you give me a second, I could open Goodreads, but I'll mention the thing that I just...
Another huge Alex quote. Give me a second so I can open Goodreads.
Flexing all over us.
I heard a thousand people...
Flexing that I have an app on my phone because I can't remember what books I read. That's
whenever
a flex.
Whenever I hear someone open Goodreads, I just get so sick of it all.
I will say that I just finished a book called Under the Whispering Door by T.J. Klune. I read that over the weekend. Really good. It's sort of like... total flex that I read a book over the... What are you even talking about anymore?
You're flexing that you can read. That's, you know, you don't need to rub it in our faces.
That's true. I had somebody read this book to me and I barely understood it. Is that better?
That's better. Cool.
Great. This is sort of like a queer Pushing Daisies mixed with, what's the other one that Brian Fuller did? Was it Dead Like Me or Dead to Me? The one where it was.
Yes. Dead Like Me.
Dead right. Like Me. Yeah, and it's about an asshole who dies. He ends up at this mystical tea shop where he's supposed to be ushered onto the other side, and he ends up hanging out there for a while and finding out about the rules of how you end up going to the afterlife and all these things. Very fun, very good. Another one, I think I mentioned this before, but Rainbow Rowell's series, if you read her run on Runaways and you liked her, she has this series called Simon Snow, which started as... It has a very weird history, but it started with this book called Fangirl that was about somebody who writes fanfic and was writing this pseudo Harry Potter gay fanfic about a character called Simon Snow. She ended up writing an actual Simon Snow book that follows up on that, and it's part of a trilogy, and they're all pretty good. But the big one that I recommend, just looking back here, Project Hail Mary, if you guys haven't read that. It's from Andy Weir, the guy who wrote The Martian, and it's about the sun starts to disappear rapidly. So this dude who's not an astronaut is sent off on a mission to save everybody light years away. But it starts off at a place where he wakes up and he doesn't remember the mission. He doesn't remember himself. He doesn't know how he got here. And he's suddenly in a galaxy light years away and has to basically work backwards and figure out how to save the entire planet. So that's super cool. Fun, super good. Really recommend that.
Wait, when do you have time to read? Is it when your kids are also reading? I'm confused because we watch a lot of television. We podcast. We're doing a lot. And I just don't know when you...
So I mentioned this, the two times that I read... Okay, I'll break it down into three chunks and then I'll move on for this. But one is I try to read at least a chapter before I go to bed at night, just to get it in.
Dreams?
What? It does. It actually helps me sleep a lot better because if I go straight from TV or straight from like... To be perfectly honest, after doing these shows for 3 hours, I'm pretty hepped up for the rest
of the night. Pretty juiced. Yeah,
I'm pretty juiced up.
I go work out. I go lift.
You're drunk is what you are.
I run for like 20 miles just to like get that energy out. No, but after that, like particularly when it is like that or I've been, you know, working late or something like that, reading a chapter tends to calm me down and help me get to sleep a little earlier.
I run around Prospect Park screaming the exact script of our podcast aloud for anyone. Please feel free to come out into the...
The other one, I sometimes read when the kids are reading. Like this weekend, my son and I just kind of lay on the bed and read together for a while, and it was the most awesome thing. So that was pretty cool.
Adorable.
And then very occasionally, there's some weekends when they're just off doing their own things at this point. Like this weekend, I was they're downstairs. They're not paying attention to me. And I was like, flip. So
that's basically it. A dream. I've never experienced that with children.
You'll get there. Your kids are younger. Yeah. You'll get there. It's still tough. It's still very tough. But
I just started The City We Became by N.K. Jemisin and very excited to read. I'm at about one page every couple weeks, so really enjoying it.
That book is awesome. I'm very excited to hear what you think of it. Let's move on to another question here. This is from Kevin. When reading a comic book based on something in another medium, do you prefer a straight adaptation or a comic that transforms the source into something new? And what are some of your favorite examples?
I mean, that's tough. I mean, it's at this point, we kind of don't want this straight adaptation anymore, right? Like, that used to be the thing, like, don't mess with something that is so perfect that we love. But now it's, you know, I feel like we've kind of gotten to this place where we want to see the things we recognize, but told in a different way, in a different medium, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I like to see changes, especially once we know it, we know it. Let's do something else. But I mean, I'm not a huge G.I. Joe fan, but the G.I. Joe books that have come out in the past few years, I thought were really interesting because they were different. And they were much, plug your ears, Pete, smarter than.
Oh, how dare you.
G.I. Joe content.
I need somebody to recap what happened every 15 minutes. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah. I mean, on a similar note, I was a huge fan of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles cartoon, and I just found these black and white versions that they did in comic books, which were a really interesting riff on that. Oh, they don't eat pizza and say cowabunga quite as much, but they're pretty good.
That filled up most of their time, if I remember correctly.
Jolene is correct in the comments. Larry Hama's G.I. Joe.
Yeah, and I haven't read those, to be fair, but I wasn't allowed to watch G.I. Joe as a kid, so I'm behind. Yeah, that's why I'm having Pete inform me about
barbecue and roadblock. Yeah. Come on, man, exactly. The good stuff.
Yeah. Nice. Roadblock, traffic cone, spare tire, all the traffic based Joes.
Let's go over to another question here. This is from Straight Bullet. When I met Mark Russell this weekend, I had one of those awkward I'm meeting a celebrity type moments where I said, "Hey, Mark, I'll be seeing you on Comic Book Club. I like all your work." And he said, "Oh, yeah, thank you." I responded with, "Yeah, I curate drinks for them. I'm a chef." And he looked at me like I was an alien, and I immediately realized that I should have stopped talking when I had the chance and quickly walked away. Do any of you have any awkward celebrity moments you wish you could take back?
I mean, we've talked about plenty of them on this
show. So many.
Yeah.
I will say that's very funny because that does sound insane.
It doesn't sound insane. It just sounds like a little bit of an overshare to somebody who maybe doesn't know.
No, I mean, why would you be like, I curate drinks for a comic book club online? Podcast. That doesn't necessarily make sense.
I curate drinks for a podcast about comic books. It sounds like, what are you having, some sort of brain malfunction? Oh, a stroke of some sort.
I think it's a great thing to say to somebody.
Okay, I'll say that the next time I meet a celebrity.
You should.
Yeah. Yeah, that should be that's a great opening line for any interview, especially professionally, Alex. Well, yeah. I have two. One, obviously, our story when Alex and I were at a San Diego after party, very drunk. The only thing they had left at the party in Jim Lee's room was, I believe, warm vodka. So Alex and I were sharing.
I was there too, motherfucker.
You weren't in the room with us, if I remember correctly. You had gone to bed.
Oh yeah,
you were too high because you were smoking out front. If I remember correctly.
Yeah.
And on our way out the door.
Wait, were we hanging out with Gabriel Ba, right? Was it Gabriel Ba?
No.
No, it was either Gabriel Ba or Fabio Mood. I know.
Was it?
No, that's kind of Yeah, because I very specifically remember, I was, again, very drunk, so I don't remember this very well, but I remember him being like, "No, this is how you drum on your chest like this," and taught me, and I was like, yeah, I get it. I know what you're talking about.
I was not there for that conversation. That also sounds crazy. but I turned on the way out the door and I said, "Jim, you're the king of San Diego." It didn't make any sense, I'm sure, to him. And the other one, I spent a year working for a social media based show on a CNN's sister network, HLN. And I was interviewing George Lucas for his garbage movie Strange Magic, and the last question I asked him was, which finger would you choose to rule the world? The question that the wizard asked Willow,
right?
The movie Willow. And I asked it, and he looked at me weird, and he was like, "That's me. I wrote that." And I was like, "Yeah, I know. That's why I'm asking you." And that was way more awkward than I thought it was. I thought it was going to be like, we're going to have a little Willow moment. Like, and this is before the new Willow series is ever a thing. Like, it was like a deep cut question that I thought he was going to respect.
I similarly, on an interview thing, I think the name of the show is Your Pretty Face is Going to Hell, the one on Adult Swim. That was like the sort of
great friends of the show on that. Henry Zebrowski's in that show. Craig Rowan, writer.
Who's on, maybe I'm thinking of another one then. It was the sort of like country family one that Amy Sedaris and Patton Oswalt and a couple of other people were in.
Different show, yes.
Different show. But I interviewed them for that, and I remember very specifically doing this thing with Amy Sedaris and one of the other actors, and I tried to play a weird game with them, and they just sat there the entire time being like, oh, no, Alex, no. And it wasn't funny. I like came up with it on the way over because I was like, I have no questions about your weird show that's unquestionable. But so they were absolutely right. But I definitely think back on that, like, I should have thought about that a little better. But
All my stories are just usually me getting mad at somebody who's famous. So there's a lot of them, but they're all kind of very similar.
Wow. What were we there for any of them?
No, Pete was on the floor.
Yeah, I was on the floor.
Running around Street Beat.
Yeah, I was running around the floor. I think the one that was kind of the, I shoved my foot in my mouth at the beginning was the guy who's like really blown up now. He's on This Is Us. He wrote the, he had, before Berserker was Keanu Reeves, it was his idea.
You're talking about the guy from Heroes.
Milo Ventimiglia?
Yeah.
Milo Ventimiglia.
Milo. Yeah, yeah. And
This Is Us guy?
Yeah, This Is Us guy. And, you know, it was one of those things where we were talking and it was this thing about like he was complaining about sleep. And I was like, you know, sleep is all I have. You know, like, why would you want to take that away from me? And we got in this huge kind of like a fight. And I never recovered. It was just like this thing. Like,
sleep?
Yeah, he just was coming at sleep. Like, yeah, if I didn't have to fucking sleep, I'd get
you know what? That's I'm sorry. That sounds like a good place. That's a good hill to plant your flag on, Pete. I'm proud of you.
Like he was equally being weird. As like, that's not a mess up on your part. He was being weird too.
Well, either way, you know. I mean, you know, you're supposed to kind of like, okay, you're the famous person or whatever. I'll let you do whatever your thing is, but I never seem to get that right.
I did a web series for Trident with him and Shannon Doherty. Little fact about me.
Nice. Was it cool? Or was he complaining about sleep the whole time?
Yeah, all he wanted to do. No, he wanted to sleep. All he wanted to do was sleep.
Oh, I do have one other that I remember. So when I was working for MTV, we were doing a unofficial Game of Thrones after show. And we had a pretty good run of like having Game of Thrones actors come in. And the idea of the show was it was cooking with Thrones. So we'd cook a recipe from the episode and then also break down the episode at the same time. So we had like Natalie Dormer on it and the guy who played Sam. And then we had some weird celebrities like Kevin Hale from Glee happened to be in, and he was a huge Game of Thrones fan, so he came on. So we had like legit celebrities and people from the show. It was not a dinky run of night show, but we're at a Comic-Con and the Red Wedding episode of Game of Thrones was going to air. And I was like, we didn't have a screener for it, but we knew the Red Wedding was going to happen. Everybody knew it was going to happen. We're like, well, we should tape something to put up afterwards. So at the Comic-Con, Felicia Day was there, and I asked her rep, I was like, hey, we'd love to have her on. This is the thing displayed. And she's like, that sounds great. Why don't we meet in the green room and you can set it up? We're like, great. So we spent the rest of the day being like, what would be fun to dress up the set? And we got hundreds of red vines and red candy to like put on to be like, since we don't have food that we can make here, we have some food you can snack on while we're doing the show. And clearly her PR agent had not actually told her what was going on at all. So she walked into the green room and saw an entire table of red vines and a camera pointed at her. We're like, right this way, Miss Day. And she was so uncomfortable about it. I eventually like talked to her about it and explained what I was doing. It was fine. But the super uncomfortable, awkward celebrity thing was on the side the entire time, just like sitting on a chair, was Will Wheaton being like, this is why I told you to never do these things, Felicia. Don't do this, Felicia. And I was like, what is going on here? This is terrible.
Wow.
So
Slammed by Will Wheaton. Wait, why would that be so weird for her?
I think, like, if you're expected to do an interview about the stuff you're working on and you walk in and see a table covered in red vines, it's weird. Yeah.
But she did a show with Felicia Day, right?
She was in the same show with Milo Ventimiglia and Tim Story. Not a joke for Trident. It was called The Web Ventures of Justin and Alden.
Hey, did Trident Alden get a Verizon of
yes?
Oh my God. I heard his voice talking to me. It's been creeping me out for a while. I'm glad we talked about that.
This is from Nelson Martinez over on YouTube. Justin, have you caught up on Yellow Jackets? Pete, have you seen any of it? Alex, have you seen it now yet? Are you guys excited about finale new season announce? Have you guys watched yet?
I haven't watched it yet. I had to crush Search Party this week, which is what I did, and all the other stuff that I'm watching and we're watching. So I haven't watched it yet.
Pete?
Nope.
Great. I have seen the finale. Can't talk about it at all or even hint or mention what I thought about it. Reviews are embargoed until after it airs. But if people are checking it out, it's been kind of insane how much steam the show has gotten over the course of the run. Like, it is legit word of mouth hit. And if you have the time this weekend, the finale is Sunday night. Well worth just getting like the 1 week Showtime trial, binging the 9 episodes.
I'm going to crush it this week.
Yeah, it's worth it.
Search Parties today.
This is one that, like, again, zero I am saying about the finale. It's just pretty clear this is a finale that, like, people are going to talk about. You're like, oh man, you missed it. What are you talking about? You got to get caught up. So, there you go. This is from Shenanigans over here on Crowdcast. Like Darren McGavin guest starring in X-Files is an homage to Kolchak. What are some of your favorite guest appearances that are homages to older TV shows or movies?
Ooh, guest appearances as an older homage. Well, I love how we get Wesley Shipp is his name, the original Flash.
Mm-hmm.
How he's popped up in Flash.
John Wesley Shipp,
John Wesley Shipp, that's it.
Yeah.
So good. I love the original Flash series, so the fact that they're willing to pay homage like that is great.
That's pretty awesome. Pete, you got one?
Nope.
Pete's done answering questions.
Great. That's it for Pete. Thanks, Pete. Man, it's tough. All I'm rattling through are, like, Doctor Who guest stars and stuff, but that's ridiculous.
Nope. Yeah,
it doesn't count. Vincent Van Gogh, he's a classic TV character, right?
I guess in a way. Who else? I mean, I feel like that's such a thing to do now, is to have that that throwback character.
I'll mention one. Lazy, this is getting into our next question, but I thought it was super fun how Luke's friends from Star Wars, who I believe were cut mostly out of the movie, were in the last episode of Book of Boba Fett.
Yeah. Do you guys join that now, or are you still fucking hating on you pieces of shit?
The second episode was much better than the first, I thought.
Mm-hmm. I still don't care about the flashbacks.
Oh, you fucking...
Well,
the show was so much fun.
The train robbery thing was cool. Like,
I guess here's the thing that was kind of holding me up about it is, I know it was technically, I guess, a wagon robbery, but we had the same thing in the first season of Mandalorian, right? Where he was trying to get on the Jawas. I'm forgetting what the vehicle is called, but he's trying to get on there. It felt very similar.
Do your research. You don't know the Jawas vehicle?
I don't really watch this nerd shit, so I'm just trying to keep up with you guys.
Sandcrawler.
Sandcrawler, yeah. Shouts he was trying to get on the Sandcrawler, and it felt like this was just a train going through the desert, which
it was weird that the train was just like, we just go wherever we want. Yeah, this is just a loose train.
Yeah, this isn't even like a vehicle. It's just straight up a train that hovers.
Well, and I think your note as well, I agree with you, like, it feels like, hey, this is the same as the Mandalorian, but it's with a guy who's we see his face.
Versus the stuff in the quote unquote present, I think is great. I love that.
Yeah.
The Wookiee assassin? Come on, that was exciting.
Black Cranston. I don't think that I actually said
Cranston. There's a couple R's.
Cranston, I think is what it is. But he's straight from the Marvel Comics, which is very cool. Yeah. That was super cool.
Kieran Gillen, Ron, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
Darth Vader.
Yeah, so that's super fun. I freaked out seeing him. Loved the Hutt twins. They were super fun. I was like, this is great. We're really getting somewhere. And then he's like, oh, I got punched once. I have to go back in my Bacta tank and remember my whole life.
Oh, stop it.
God.
Yeah.
Let's move
forward. You survived the Sarlacc.
I don't care. I don't need to know how Boba Fett got his brand new stick. Like, that's not a story that I'm interested in finding out.
How dare you?
Who cares? Oh, he got some new clothes. I've been spending every single appearance that he had in Mandalorian and every episode. I was like, whoa, why is he wearing those black clothes under his regular Boba Fett armor? This is what I'm concerned about. I don't care. I don't care.
You're a fucking asshole, dude.
I agree with Pete. I want to know where all the sticks come from.
That's
every
right.
Every stick has,
he's in the desert and then he wakes up and he's got a stick. How the fuck did that happen?
Here's what I want to know. What I want to know is, like, is 7th episode, is that going to be the episode where he's going to get in the Bacta tank and flash back to buying the Bacta tank? Because that's going to be super sweet.
Where did he get it?
Who did he, did he get it from Watto, maybe? Maybe he got it from Watto.
Plus, his is a lay-down Bacta tank, which is different than Luke's, which is a stand-up. And I feel like that's...
There's so much story there.
Yeah, it's a lot of story. I mean, there's as much story there as there is in the rest of the show currently.
Yes. And that transitions nicely into the next question from Jonathan McCool. Can we get Alex to shit all over the episode of Boba Fett that has not come out yet? I want to like it. I want to like the show. I want to like it more than I am liking it. And I do think, again, the stuff of the present, there's a lot of stuff they could do there. But I'm very trepidatious to watch tomorrow's episode if it's going to be like 2 minutes of things happening where Ming-Na Wen is like, ugh. And Boba the Fett talks to one more person and is like, ooh, I'm tired again. Let me remember walking through the desert or whatever it does.
Well, I do think if they can find a way to differentiate the show a little bit more from The Mandalorian, it will be better.
Yeah.
And maybe that's what they're going to do going forward.
Maybe this is partially, mind you, expectations, I guess. But I feel like the story was like, here's a gangster mob story set in the Star Wars universe. Very cool. And then instead, like you're saying, Justin, it just goes back to The Mandalorian, or it's like Dances with Wolves, but in the Star Wars universe. And I've already seen Dances with Wolves.
Go fuck.
But nice. Times. Recently, hey. Right? What a rewatch. What a rewatch Dances with Wolves must be. I just feel like also The Mandalorian was more fun because he messed up a lot and was not great. So there was constantly undercutting this very self-serious character. Boba, they don't seem to want to do that as much. He doesn't get to be as fun. And I hope he gets to be more fun because, Pete, I want this to be good just like you.
It is good, you fucking assholes.
Right.
Is it good or do you just like Star Wars things?
I love Star Wars things. Not all Star Wars things are good. I've had to watch a lot of things that weren't enjoyable.
Name one not good Star Wars thing. I can't think of a single one.
It just upsets me that you guys. Learning, things.
Wow! Everyone's shutting down. What if he had a baby Boba? If it was Boba and baby Boba, in a little hovering.
What I would love, not to bring him up again, but I would love a little baby Watto who would be like,
"Come on, Danny."
Who would say slightly anti-Semitic things?
Love the money.
Watto is. I feel like he's done. Right? We're done with Watto.
Yeah, probably. First time I saw myself on screen. This is from Nat Townsend.
Wow. Oh, that's fucked up. Jolene, I'd rather see a separate show about Ming-Na Wen. Yes.
Hell yeah.
And as I said, I think Ming-Na Wen needs a chair. She has to stand for so much in this show, and get her a stool, and that'll change the whole vibe.
This is challenging us to history section, which is usually taken by Kevin, but I guess we'll see it at Nat this time. Oh. What are some other earlier instances of influential supernatural fiction like Kolchak from before superhero genre fiction went so mainstream? Sorry to put you on the spot. Feel free to come back to this one next week. All right,
Nat. Right, maybe yeah, in my we'll 60s when I've retired and read a bunch of old paperbacks I find in some sort of basement. Old things that are good refs.
Old things that are good refs. Mary Shelley's Frankenstein. Is that what you want to know, Nat? Is that what you're looking for?
Is that what you want?
Well, Pete's gone. Oh, Pete's gone.
I'm trying to think. I mean, so much of that stuff has been mined to death. So what? I think the Twilight Zone reboot is not great. And that particular type of story, like anthology that is like, I mean, Black Mirror updated it successfully. But we don't have that sort of everyday, down-to-earth, terrifying story that takes a modern issue and explores it through science fiction. That's something I would like to see.
Good call. We got one last one here. It's another Book of Boba Fett one from Jolene. When does Book of Boba Fett take place? Because, like, Jabba's barge was there when he climbed out of the Sarlacc pit, but Boba looks, like, so much older than the oldest clone trooper. First of all, it's the Pit of Carcoon, and it's called the Sarlacc pit, but... whatever you want to call it, I guess. I guess you're not a real fan, but and of course,
don't go at fucking Jolene, dude.
Book of Boba Fett, as we all know, takes place 9 ABY, right, guys?
I mean, I'm sorry that you know that so quickly. Off the top of
your head. I do. 9 years after the Battle of Yavin, guys.
Good,
guys.
No, I do know that way of keeping time, but I mean, the real answer is because the actor is older, and they just. You know, you can't young up him. He is who he is. And he looks like he's great. He looks like he's in great shape for all of the hard stuff that he has to do. Mm-hmm. But in general, it's a bit like Roger Moore, James Bond, where it's like, oh, this guy is just not built for fighting and doing that stuff because he's older and doesn't karate chop well.
Yeah. And the reason the barge is there is so you can tell which Sarlacc pit it is. That's pretty much nice. It.
Well, the barge was left there, you know, it was exploded there. So, of course, not like someone's going to be like, oh, I guess maybe there would be people that would come through in a sand crawl and be like, let's get this junk.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Julian says it was still smoking. First of all, that's a line from The Mask, right, Pete?
Somebody stop you.
Mm-hmm. No, I think that's a Fred Flintstone line from the early incarnations of Fred Flintstone.
But yeah, I mean, I think the implication was he went into the Sarlacc and then got out relatively quickly. He was not in there for a very long period of time.
But he was going to be digested over the course of 1,000 years.
That's
right. He had some time.
Right. But maybe he was in there for like a day or two. Tops.
I think it's
Alex, you also, don't know also the whole minutes, being... how many minutes after the Battle of Yavin was he in there, Alex?
Great question. I'll work that out in my head right now. Actually, I can't, because we got to move on with our next section, which is trivia, and for that, we're going to turn it over to Pete Page.
All right. This is the part we give back to you, the lovely audience. It's an opportunity to win $25 free to Midtown Comics online, because if you had $25, you go to a comic book shop. Zelbs, we have a person, right?
We all have a person out there somewhere, but we do have a person for trivia as well. And this week it is John McCool, who I have welcomed into the stream. Now, if you would like to play trivia, I'm going to drop a link in the chat here on Crowdcast and YouTube. Also, you can check it out at Comic Book Live. All you got to do is submit to do the trivia, and we will bring you on, and I don't want to ruin it, but you're definitely going to win $25 gift card to Midtown Comics.
That's well, and learn a little bit about Harry Reid, Senator Harry Reid, I think we established.
Ooh, that's in order, right? All right. Hello, hey! Books.
Look at this, books.
Books.
I read all those books.
Don't flex on us, bro. Don't flex on us. Hey, great to see you. Thanks for joining us.
Totally read it.
Nah. You're sort of pushing it a little hard. It makes me feel like you haven't read any of them.
That was War and Peace.
Nice.
That's
all
so
right.
Funny.
Let's get this trivia started.
That's the truth. That's the truth right there. Is we might as well have a sign that says books because it's all sorry, Peace.
Today's trivia is on topical comic news and a small nod to the legend Betty White, R.I.P.
No!
Please listen to all three options before making your selection.
Here we go. Question number one. Which comic coming out in April has a hero dying? Is it A, Spider-Man, B, Thor, or is it C, Rick Dutch Cousin? So it's either A, Spider-Man, don't pick it, or it's B, Thor.
B.
That is correct. Wow, they have said nice. That someone is dying in Thor and it's going to be hero. All right, here we go. Question number two. Teeny Howard will start writing which comic and be teaming up with Miss Marvel artist Nico Leone? Is it A, She-Hulk, B, Catwoman, or C, Jean Smart? So it's either A, She-Hulk, don't pick it, or it's B, Catwoman.
Hmm. Gonna use my thinking beard on that one. Nice. I think I'll go with B.
B is correct, nice. And that is a sweet thinking beard, by the way.
Much I have an props unthinking to you. Beard.
All right, here we go. Last one. Who recently signed a mostly exclusive deal with Image Comics? Is it A, Dan Slott, B, Jeff Lemire, or is it C, Joan Plowright? So it's either A, Dan Slott, don't pick it, or B, Jeff Lemire.
I'll go with Jeff Lemire.
That is correct.
Amazing.
Yes. Great work. Congratulations. You have won a $25 gift card to Midtown Comics. And is the movie, Pete, that you've been intimating with the third answer, is Bringing Down the House?
That's right. The 2003 problematic hit, Bring It Down the House.
Problematic hit. That, and as we know, that is been carved into Betty White's tombstone. Now, Pete, let me ask you before we move past trivia, what are we Robert Durst next week, or are you worried about the backlog of dead celebrities?
Yeah, it's happening fast, and it's sad, and it's tough to keep up. But Mr. McCool, thank you for joining us. Been a pleasure.
Thank you.
Keep all reading. Right.
There you go. Once again, if you want to do trivia, check out that link and please submit. And
now that New York gambling is legal in New York, I'm running a site every week where we wager on what the dead celebrity Pete's going to bring to trivia next is, because there's a lot of hot celebs out there. Bob That's Saget right. popping off here in the comments. So let's.
Wasn't
just...
Sidney Poitier first though?
That's what I'm saying. I think there's a lot of pretty... there's
and
a lot of
just to
possible...
mention again, you have already you've skipped Senator Henry Reid, Harry Reid. Harry Reid.
Harry Reid. Wow. Harry if Reid. You don't know his wow. name, Alex, he's not trivia.
I'm not in charge. I'm not in charge of trivia. This right, beautiful no tribute. As we all know, new comics come out all the time. What are you guys looking forward to, Pete?
Coming out all the time. I'm looking forward to Dark Ages number 4, as well as Batman or Robin and Batman number 3.
Justin?
I was going to say Robin and Batman number 3 as well. It's a fantastic read. But in lieu of that, I'm going to shout out Rain number 1 coming out of some Image Comics, which is written by Chris Rael, based on a story by Joe Hill. Is that accurate?
It's edited by Chris Rael. Chris Rael does a backup story. But yes, it is based on a story by Joe Hill, which is a real good story.
And it's just a great comic, I'm assuming, here with really beautiful art by Ashley Wood and Zoe Thorogood.
I'm looking forward to What's the Furthest Place from Here, number 3, I believe, from Image Comics. This book is so good. We had Matthew Rosenberg on the show a couple of weeks ago to talk about this book. It is a post-apocalyptic story of a bunch of different tribes, all of whom are made out of kids. There's a bunch of weird, potentially supernatural weirdness going on, but it's so good, so involving, and the art by Tyler Boss is so good. And folks, that is it for this week's show. A couple of things. We want to thank James Aquilone for being on the podcast. Check out Kolchak, the Night Stalker 50th Anniversary, which is on Kickstarter right now. Yeah. Mark Russell, don't forget to check out DC's One Star Squadron, which is issue 2 is on stand, and issue 3 is coming out next month. Also, Batman Urban Legends number 11, which just came out.
Fun story. And there's a bunch of other stories in there, too, that are good.
There absolutely are. Next week on the show, we're going to have two more guests for you guys. Warwick Johnson Cadwell is going to be here to talk about Falcon Spear, and Rich Wojcicki is going to be here to talk about Deadbeats and Miscreants. If you'd like to support our podcast, patreon.com/comicbookclub. You can subscribe, listen, and follow on iTunes, Android, Spotify, or Stitcher, or the app of your choice. Don't forget to leave us a question or a review suggestion in the iTunes reviews, at Comic Book Live on Twitter, Comic Book Club Live on Instagram, comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and many more. Until next time, we'll see you at the comic book shop.
Feel better, Aaron.
Put your shirt on, Alec. Good night.
Never.
So grab your ring.